Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Great program in store for you today. The editor of Pointing Dog Journal, among other things, Jake Smith, will be joining me on the line. We'll be talking all things pointing dogs, literature, magazine publishing, and, well, anything else that comes to mind, including the results of a recent poll in my Upland Nation newsletter on where you're headed this fall. Yeah, once the leads are unclipped and we're allowed to shelter somewhere other than in place, some interesting results in that, so I'll be sharing those with you. Talking to you from the Cabela's podcast studio, where we will also cover some public access advice, some hunting strategy and dog handling, hard lessons I've learned, so you don't have to. We'll go on a few adventures, offer up a tip or a tactic or two, and today in the studio with me, my co-host, German wire-haired pointer Flick, who is the subject of this first little discussion. He is, progressing in all ways steady. The number one goal right now is, when he sees a bird, to hold still instead of crashing in on it. Don't ask me why that's a real priority right now, but suffice it to say that you can probably think of your own reasons that a dog that sees a bird and slams into a whoa is a good idea, unless, of course, it's a flushing breed. But, we're working on it various ways. If anybody there has a suggestion about how to anchor a bird in a visible spot that I can bring Flick into, you know, the anchoring device itself, I've got all sorts of things cobbled together, but I'm certainly open to better ideas and more suggestions in that world. You know, speaking of lockdown and all of that, we went on a little camping trip over the weekend. Theoretically, it was within the bounds of the comrade governor's edicts and executive orders, but notice a lot of other people who weren't actually anywhere near following those rules, and I think it's a sign, a trend. Things are going to be happening, and the governors who don't read the writing on the wall are probably going to have a little bit harder time come elections next time around for them. Just my opinion. If you have your own, you know where to share it. Wing Shooting USA's Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page, both great places to start a discussion. Trying to keep it civil and always trying to keep it informational and educational and have a little fun at the same time. If you're looking for more fun, of course, I invite you to watch Wing Shooting USA, the television show, now on Amazon Prime Video. All right, Jake is on the line and ready for us right after a couple, and he'll understand this because, advertising makes the world go round, especially the podcast world and the magazine world. We're brought to you in part by Sage and Breaker Gun Care Products. They are crafted at the highest caliber. They must have pretty good taste. They use my blog posts once in a while, and I appreciate that, Fred. You can read them there. They're originals just for the sageandbreaker.com website. And the best news of the day for them is they are now stocking long gun and handgun cleaning mats again after a long period of sellout. I wish I could say that. Oh, I am. No, I'm not. Anyway, let's not talk about my character. Dogtra.com is where you learn more about the T&B dual collar system, my favorite training collar for any number of reasons. No toggling. Two collars, two sets of buttons. You can do it with your eyes closed, and believe me, I do every once in a while. Yeah, as I said, without further ado, on the line with me right now, Jake Smith. You probably know him as the editor of Pointing Dog Journal, maybe a Retriever Journal, but he's got a lot else going for him, I guess would be the simple way to describe it. Jake, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Scott. Hope you're doing well.
All well here. The leashes are getting a little longer by the day when it comes to the governor's edicts, so that's good. How about you? You were telling me off mic that you had I'll call it a gratifying morning.
Yeah, I was able to get out with my my younger son. He's 15 and chasing some turkeys. And he's only been out a couple of times, and normally school gets in the way. But with all the schooling being done at home, we were able to sneak out for a little bit. We actually got back to the house, I think, before the others even woke up. But he got to see everything except stand over a turkey. We got to see a nice big old tom gobble and strut across the field pretty much for about 30 solid minutes as he slowly made his way across the field with a couple of hens. And then a few Jakes surprised us on the right and came just barreling right in toward us and just hit the brakes at about 30, 35 yards. And they were starting to kind of backpedal a little bit. And he took a shot. He missed, as I'm sure many of us have done. Those birds are a little bit more difficult to hit than everybody thinks. But hopefully we'll get a chance to get at them again tomorrow morning.
Well, good luck on that, and at least somebody's getting out and having a good time. I lost yet getting home before everyone got out of bed. That's why I'm not a turkey hunter.
Yeah, it was. He's not much of a morning person either, but I twisted his arm on that one. So we might try a couple of evening hunts. Our last turkey season, the Michigan season is split into two 1 week seasons. And then 1 month-long season in May. And so that goes to the end of May. So we've got a little bit of time yet.
Okay, well, good for you, and wish you the best of luck. Like I said in your brief introduction, we probably know your name from the masthead of the Pointing Dog Journal, but, you know, why don't you just bring us up to speed on all the things you're doing, many of which probably are, to a degree, following in the keyboard clicks of somebody else with the same last name.
Yeah, I was able to learn from one of the best while I was growing up, my father, Steve. And my background is actually in wildlife sciences. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in wildlife sciences. Was able to get my master's degree at South Dakota State University along with my wife. Same degree in the same field of study, and that was a fun few years. We were newly married, and there were a lot of ducks, a lot of pheasants. We had two young dogs. That was tough to come back home from, but the opportunity to move back home and to work with Dad at the Pointing Dog Journal and the Retriever Journal magazine and send our future kids to the same school I graduated from, it was just way too tough to pass up. But the magazines themselves, it's been such an interesting experience learning from Dad, not just the editing, and it's not just the issue planning. Everybody sees the final product when it comes out, in the mix of stories and photographs and the authors and photographers, places you get to know and learn about, but it's also in the printing and the production and the promotional aspect of the magazines as well, all of which we take care of right here in northern Michigan in the same building. We are a big printing press as well as commercial printer. We do work in the food service industry, IT development, association management, and everybody wears a lot of hats in this office, so editing the Pointing Dog Journal, the Retriever Journal, as well as Just Labs magazine. Those are just a couple of hats I wear around here as the company's publications manager. Our publications division manages about 30-some publications, both consumer publications and those magazines for associations that are a membership benefit for their members. These can be enthusiast associations or professional associations. So I kind of manage our graphic design team, other editors. I help with the promotions. I help with the renewal series of all of those. My fun job is when I get to sit down and read some dog articles and pick some good photographs. I like to tease people. My job's really difficult because I get to look at cool dog photos most of the day. So that's pretty nice. But it does keep me busy. No day is ever the same. There's always a lot on my plate, and it's quite diverse.
It sounds like it, especially those kind of what I'll call tangential responsibilities. But, you know, being in the publishing world, and I was a publisher for 5 years, I understand that. Now I sell stuff to, you know, sell content to guys like you. So I still got my finger in all of that. And I think I would ask you if you are surprised when people realize all the things entailing actually getting a magazine back out onto a newsstand or into a mailbox. Is that still a surprise to people? It's a surprise to me every time it shows up.
It is a surprise. And three of our dog magazines are bi-monthly magazines, but because I edit all of them, I essentially have a monthly and a half. I'm responsible for putting out 18 issues a year. I always love it when occasionally we'll get a subscriber, you know, stops by the office. They're local. They were in town. They've always wanted to see it. And I, 10 times out of 10, when I start giving them a tour, it's always the same of, I didn't realize it was either this big or that there was this much involved. We have all the machines here. We have three different presses. We have folders, inkjetters, baggers, cutters, everything that goes into the production of the magazine. And it's always a little good for myself too when I give a little tour like that and explain all the different steps and what each machine is responsible for. It always blows me away the number of hands that are involved in producing the magazine and the talent that is necessary among all of the people responsible for manufacturing it. In a lot of ways, I have sort of the easy job because I just get to think up things and put them on paper. But those guys out on the floor, they have to, the amount of paper they have to manage, and with the precision that they have to manage it in hitting a specific mail date or close to it, it just kind of blows me away all the time. And during this COVID-19 stay at home, I've been out of touch with those guys a little bit, and it's been a little discouraging. It's always nice I can walk out of my office and walk about 100 feet or so, and I can see the press running. And it gives me a sense of completion when I see that magazine come off the press. Lately, I think just a few weeks ago, I received my copy of the magazine in the mail at home, and this was the first time I had never seen it on the floor in various stages, and it was a little odd. So I got a good feeling of what a subscriber might feel like, where they just, you know, all of a sudden it just shows up in the mailbox. I knew what was going on behind the scenes with all of that, but I'm back in the office today, and it's nice to see all the machines still operating.
I remember the days when by the time that thing came off the press and was stacked up and bundled and ready to go, the last thing I wanted to do was read the dang thing again. But I was very, very hands-on.
Yes, by the time that magazine comes out, I probably read every article and photo caption 4 or 5 times. And, you know, it never fails. I'll still get a message or an email from someone who catches the mistake. You should have done this, should have done that. And I'm like, yep, I probably should have. So when it comes off press, I don't even look at it. I flip through it to make sure that all the pages are there, because sometimes we will get a hiccup in the production and a group of pages will get doubled up at the expense of another group of pages. It's sort of a needle in a haystack issue. I won't look at it again. I don't even, if there's a mistake, I don't really want to know about it. So yeah, nothing I can do about it.
Exactly. Well, let's enough about that, because we both lived there and will again, I'm sure. But, you know, there's got to be something quite gratifying about the reaction. Once that thing arrives in a mailbox and people start looking at it, what is the thing that you get, the feeling you have when you start getting feedback from people, or when you look at that thing after you've given it a moment to rest?
I get two feelings. So if I get an email and the subject line says something to the effect of "your current issue... ... I kind of look at the, you know, it's almost like a horror movie. I kind of look at it at the screen between my fingers until I see the first few words, and I don't know if it's going to be a nice one or someone telling me I got rocks in my head. But it's always interesting. Sometimes I will ask for specific feedback to a question, a conversation starter, for example. I did this recently in my editorial for Just Labs magazine, which is our family magazine for people who own Labrador retrievers. There's no hunting in it. All of the hunting is diverted to the Retriever Journal. So Just Labs magazine allows us to celebrate all of the other wonderful things that these great dogs do. So I asked a simple question, just a fun question about using, you know, what five words would you use to describe your Labrador? And I asked, you know, if email them back to me, and I'll make a couple of fun pages with it in the future. And it's neat to see those trickle in. It's gratifying to know people are reading, but then they're also taking the time to respond. We're not gigantic magazines. We don't have, you know, millions of subscribers, as much as I would love that. That would be awesome. But the nice thing about being a little bit smaller is it allows me to be a little more intimate with the audience. And it kind of develops that feeling of an extended family, which obviously our dogs are family. So being able to share that common thread with so many people across the country in so many different, you know, different jobs, different political views, different things that we do for fun, but we're all kind of joined by that common thread of a love of our dogs, and in the hunting world, a love of upland bird hunting and waterfowl hunting. And so it's neat to see that feedback among all of the subscribers, and to share that with them, and hopefully through, you know, things like my editorial and the types of articles that we put out and the voices of the different writers that we bring forth, hopefully they'll see that I'm just like the rest of them. I'm just like everybody else. I'm just like them. I enjoy the same things. I miss just as many birds. My dogs are way worse trained than theirs are. I'm positive of that. But I have just as much fun getting out and just being out there.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And no matter how bad your shooting is, it's probably still better than mine. And Flick is making an editorial comment in the background.
That's, you can not hear saying that much,
guy. Yeah. Yeah, but I do. I echo your feeling about the, it's one big fraternity. If we have nothing else in common, we do have that.
Right.
And by the way, everybody, you're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, the host. That's Jake Smith, the editor of the Retriever Journal and the Pointing Dog Journal, among other things. Several hats, a whole bunch of balls in the air all the time, but that's the way the business world goes. Jake, we're doing it right now. I've got a poll on my newsletter, my emailed newsletter, and I've asked everybody where they're headed this fall to hunt. And you might be surprised as well, but before I give you the answer to that question, where are you headed this fall?
Probably going to be sticking close to home. I've got my oldest is heading off to college. At least fingers are crossed that they will have colleges open in the fall. A lot of universities in Michigan are the presidents are coming forth and saying we're going to open. That's our plan. So we've got his one of the reasons he picked this university is for the marching band. It's a little university in southern Michigan, and he's really excited about it. So I think a lot of our Saturdays are going to be going down and watching some small college football and listening to the band, provided that they allow fans in the stadium. But, you know, where I'm in this little corner of northern Michigan, I have a few favorite little covers, but there's so much room to explore that I would like to get out a little bit more close to home. My job keeps me a little closer here. There's a chance I might be able to head on over to Wisconsin. I think my dad's heading over there. Maybe later this year, maybe this is the UP, I'm not sure, but hopefully we can get up north a little bit. It would be nice. I still trying to get back to South Dakota for some pheasants or even North Dakota for some waterfowl. But I've got three tethers keeping me at home right now with a young family, and I know my traveling days will come in the future a little bit.
Well, good luck. I hope you execute at least some of those plans. If your son ever gripes about his college marching band director, send him to me. I'll tell him a little bit about how hard that job is, too. But in the meanwhile, you've picked as one of your out-of-state destinations one of the states that is neck and neck with another one for the top location for out-of-state travel, at least among the folks who took the poll in my newsletter. South Dakota and Kansas, neck and neck statistically in terms of the top two destinations. And I'll have more on those, among others, coming up in the Upland Nation podcast. That's Jake Smith. I'm Scott Linden. Jake, if you had to narrow it down, first off, what kind of dog or dogs are you running these days?
I have three Labrador Retrievers.
Well, that figures.
And only one of them is actually a hunting dog. The other two came out of the Leader Dog for the Blind program. So my one hunting dog is she's great. She is absolutely raring to go all the time. She's 9 years old. She's got a little bit of hip dysplasia. She's got a bum knee, but it just doesn't stop her. And I've really, really enjoyed upland hunting behind her. She's a better upland dog than a waterfowl dog at this point. And it's funny. I'm almost chuckling and laughing at her the entire time we're out. She is just so enthusiastic. She's just a kid in a candy store.
I love it.
We lost I've always had a lab. My wife and I started off with an English setter.
Mm-hmm.
That I swear was a cat and had nine lives because she should have died nine times over. She had a very odd disease when she was very young. Her temperature spiked super, super high, had an infected uterus, but then other behavioral things too. She ran away so many times in the South Dakota cornfields. She ingested rat poison at one point when I lost her in the house and she got up in the attic. And she ended up living until she was 16. So she just kept going and just kept going. And she was not a good hunting dog by any stretch. I made a lot of mistakes training her. Some of her health set her back a little bit too. So I was never I never really had high expectations for her. We just liked to get out. And she pointed a pheasant on a preserve, I think, when she was maybe 2 months before she died. My in-laws have a shooting preserve, and she ambled on out there. She pointed a pheasant. My wife and my son unfortunately missed, and she turned around, she walked back to the house. She's like, that's it. And so it finally got to the point with her health that we had to let her go. But I really enjoy Labrador Retrievers. I love their personalities, and if I were to get another pointing dog, boy, it'd be tough not to get another setter, but I think I would be really interested in seeing what a short hair would do. So it's some options, and my wife and I really got attached to the Leader Dog for the Blind program in Michigan. We hosted one of our Labradors. She was a breeding mom, so we hosted her and helped her have three litters in our house, and then we were able to adopt her when she retired. And then we were able to, about a year and a half later after her last litter, actually adopt one of her puppies who flunked out of the program. So that's been interesting. He's a big male. He's pretty young, and I got my work cut out for him, but I think I might try to make him into a hunting dog. He's got a lot of drive. We just got to work on the fetch.
Well, good luck on that. It's funny you should, a Labrador that needs to work on fetch. Okay, well, I don't know if there's a book for that.
Yeah, he loves to fetch, but boy, when he gets a bird, it's a different experience in his mouth. And so he's really, really excited. It's not that he's afraid or shy of it. So he just needs some good exposure and some going to try to do a more of, he's a very soft dog, so I'm going to try to do more of a gentle force fetch sequence with him. I just have to carve out the time when I can really focus on it.
Yeah, welcome to my world. But, you know, you've had the experience, you've had the setter experience a lot, not just with your own, but with your dad's, of course, and all sorts of other breeds as well. And then you've got all this experience at the Pointing Dog Journal and the Retriever Journal on just about every kind of dog out there. And then the hunting side of things. I mean, when you get out, you know, what is it that gets you wired about the hunting experience?
For me, it is simply, it's when I get to the spot and I open up the door, my car door, and I kind of step out. It's that moment almost. The number of birds we see, the number of birds we bag is exceedingly incidental to the reason I go. I hear a lot and I see a lot, and a lot of people speak very, very well and beautifully about the experience. And it seems to me that for some, and I experienced this a lot in graduate school when I was in South Dakota, and so I can chalk it up to, you know, maybe some youthful exuberance, but it seems to me that a lot of those great feelings about the outdoors come about only when the bag limit is reached. And if you could have the same sort of day, the same sort of experience with family and great dogs and the weather and the scenery, and if you don't see anything, then it was a wasted effort. And for me, with the, you know, sometimes I feel it's a rarity for me to get out. So just being able to get out, to me is really the key. When it comes to the dogs, for the actual hunting part of it, there's nothing probably that makes your heart absolutely go to your throat than to see a pointing dog just slam onto a point. There's just nothing like it. I approach that with my lab Ginger. Her tail goes in complete circles when she gets birdie. It's absolutely telltale sign. It just drives me crazy, but still nothing like seeing that dog just loping either through the woods, cross the field, and just hit a wall. It's almost indescribable.
That's what got me into the game, and I know the feeling all too well. That's Jake Smith, the editor of Pointing Dog Journal and Retriever Journal. I'm Scott Linden. You're listening to my Upland Nation podcast. Jake, put your feet up, relax for a few minutes. I've got a couple little announcements, but before we jump into that, let me remind everybody we'll be coming back with the Handle It segment, all about the things I've learned the hard way so you don't have to with your dog. And then in our poll on the email newsletter, I mentioned South Dakota and Kansas neck and neck for the highest priority destination for this fall for you folks. Interestingly, though, the highest statistical category is every place else that wasn't on the list. The list included a few other of the, you know, hotbeds, but everybody's got their own place. And in fact, mine is not even on that list, but I'll share that with you down the road. I'm going to talk more about my travel plans in the next few podcasts because I'm going to invite some of you along with me. So anyway, first on the list here, the sponsors make the world go round. Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food is high on my list. I've been feeding that food for at least 5 years. And if you'd like to try it, 30% off your first order. Just use the code UPLANDNATION. Dr. Tim, of course, is a real veterinary doctor, and he's also a sled dog racer, so he knows a little bit about how to get performance out of dogs. He mixes up his own vitamin blend with added biotin and zinc. Those are essential nutrients that do all sorts of things like building skin, coat, and paw pad health. And if you are a chukar hunter, you can appreciate that last one more than virtually anything else. And also, I was reminded again as I shot the brand new Clay's course that my buddies all built up there near Redmond, Oregon over the last weekend. it's great to know you have your hearing protected, but you can still hear all the snide comments of those guys who are talking about your shooting behind your back. No, they're very kind to me because I am, after all, holding a loaded gun. But if you want to learn more about how you should protect your own hearing, go to ESPAmerica.com. ESP stands for Electronic Shooters Protection, and my good friend Jack Homa has all sorts of offerings for you there. Put those in your ears in the field and on the Clays course, and believe me, you will not regret it. ESPAmerica.com. Okay, handle it, I call the segment, because I'm trying to figure out how to do that with Flick every day. Cabela's brings you the Handle It segment. Make a note, 40% off select products during their Cabela's Camping Classic. I've talked about this a lot online lately, and I thought I'd bring it up here because I think everybody's kind of wondering how this all works. But you know, on whether it's your phone, your stereo, your television, there's a volume. Well, it used to be a dial, at least, and on my guitar amps and things like that, it's still a dial. It goes from 0 to 10 unless you're Spinal Tap, then it goes to 11. If you don't get that joke, you're too young. But anyway, just like a judge in a courtroom who has a variety of options, the punishment should fit the crime, or the praise should fit the good dog task. You've got all sorts of arrows in your quiver, and my only objective here is to remind you that you don't need to use the red button or the loudest voice. You can always moderate everything, whether it comes to praise or correction. Praise is a little bit more fun, of course, but moderation in all things, including moderation, I learn every day from Flick, and hopefully he learns from me too. Good luck, and use your inside voice once in a while instead. Okay, Jake Smith, Retriever Journal, Pointing Dog Journal editor. Did I put you to sleep yet?
I'm still here.
Oh, good, even though you got up early for turkey season today.
Yeah.
Are you much of a caller? Can you do that?
No, I'm terrible. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Terrible.
That's another reason I don't do it. You know, I was a musician and I played wind instruments. I played them all, but I, you know, specialize in wind instruments. My fear was I was always going to inhale one of those mouth calls.
Yeah, they're a little uncomfortable at times too. Especially I've got some adult braces going on here, so it's got too many things in my mouth at once. So.
Oh my. Welcome back to the Upland Nation podcast. You know, we were talking about dogs and what you get out of the hunting thing and all of that, but now let's go back to your, you know, how you pay the grocery bill around the Smith household. You've got people like me and people who even actually know how to write and take pictures, sending you all sorts of great content, suggestions, ideas, and then the finished product. That's got to be a challenge. How do you, you know, for both of your titles, at least, how do you select the stuff that actually ends up in the magazines we read?
That is the most challenging aspect of the job. It in a lot of ways it boils down to a seasonal type formula, but with the hunting magazines, you always want to, we always like to be thinking of the hunting season, and so sprinkling some hunting stories, whether they are reflective or they're instructional, or maybe a where to go or how to sort of thing, we always try to sprinkle that throughout the year. I schedule stuff at all times of the year, so I don't shoehorn myself into looking at a specific issue at a certain period of time. So if I receive a submission right now that would be a wonderful winter pheasant hunt story, for example, that I think would go great in either our January, February, or March, April issue, even though I'm working on July, August right now, I'll go ahead and work with that author on securing that story, finding out about photos, if they're available, if I'm going to have to look for stock photos down the road, and then I'll go ahead and schedule it. I have a pretty good formula on about how many stories, how many feature stories will fit in each issue depending on our page counts. Our columns are fairly well set in terms of their length. Sometimes, you know, there may be an odd time or two when I'm not able to run a column, but I know pretty much how many features I'm going to need. I will try to balance the bulk of those features based on the season. So March, April, May, June, July, August, you're going to see more puppy stuff, more training oriented, maybe some competition items. And then the fall and winter issues will predictably follow sort of the course of the season. So you'll see earlier season stuff also in the July, August, but the September, October issues, and then maybe some more southern destinations or later season destinations in the November, December, Southwest quail and Jan-Feb, for example, since that's the primary time for there. So it sort of follows that pattern, but it's also a challenge because it invariably it'll come down to where I have what I want and I have a hole, one or two, and I need something specific.
Is that when you call me?
Sure. Actually, I'll say this to your listeners. You mentioned Kansas, and we got a pretty good story about hunting in Kansas coming out in the July August issue. So,
oh, I think I remember that one. Yeah.
yeah. That was. I did have to change your title though, so I hope you don't mind. But, so planning the issues and like I said, they sort of follow a pattern, but evaluating submissions is always something I fall behind on. And anybody who is listening who has submitted stuff before and either not heard back from me or was an excruciatingly long time, I apologize. It is something that does fall by the wayside at times, and I try to set aside a certain amount of time every week or every couple of weeks to sort of go through the stack of material. It is difficult to place an article with any magazine these days. We have had in Pointy Dog Journal and Retriever Journal a little section called the Subscriber Forum for a number of years, and that has allowed us to get a lot more stories out there that otherwise would most likely either not have been published because the subject material is just not high on what our readers want to see. They are more individual stories. They're more personal stories to that writer. Essays, tributes to dogs or friends who have passed, memories of first hunts. So perhaps those stories could not fill up 2,000 words or 4.5 pages of a magazine. So I probably about a dozen years or so ago, Dad and I started this section, the subscriber forum section, where we could give those stories room to breathe. We could give them an opportunity, and I've been able to sort of get, you know, bring to life a lot of stories that have been very personal to people. And the thank you notes I get after running someone's, you know, a tribute to their father who passed away, or a memory of their son's first hunt or their dog's first point, those are some of the highlights of my day when I'm planning an issue, is being able to notify that writer who is, you know, they tell me right off the bat, I'm not a writer, but I think I have a pretty good story I'd like to at least tell you about. If you don't publish it, that's great. I just wanted to write it. that's one of the highlights of my job, is being able to tell those people I love it and I'm going to run it in this particular issue. And we always send them a few extra copies as well to pass around to friends. So it's finding all those little holes, the photos, whether they come from subscribers or I have to pick stock photos, the short little essays, and then also the bigger, meatier features that are more instructional. We try to keep a balance. A lot of it is by feel, but having that whole year in front of me to plan allows me to have more flexibility when I evaluate submissions.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that still holds true no matter what kind of document it is, a magazine, newspaper, anything in between. If it's going to be ink on paper, then the lead times are extremely long. And in your case, you know, from concept to completion, how long would a magazine actually take to get finished?
Where I'm at, and part of this is because, you know, we have the printing press right here in the building, so it doesn't need to be shipped off and shipped back. If I were to sort of look at it as when I really start thinking about the topics for an issue to when I see it go out the back door on the truck, it's probably about a good 2 months.
Yeah.
And that would be very, very tight, more closer to 3 months. By the time I start collecting manuscripts, editing the manuscripts, and then they go through various design stages where we go through a galley stage. And at that point, I'm hoping that I'm just catching grammar, punctuation. I'm not working on the actual content editing or the flow. I'm not moving paragraphs around if I need to. At the galley stage, it should be fairly clean. That's also the time I pick out photographs, which can be a arduous process. I have a huge digital stock cabinet, but sometimes just finding that right shot can be difficult. And then the design, by the time it gets turned over to the graphic designer, they have roughly about a month to work on it. And from there, it goes through another editing process. At that time, the ads are being sold and delivered to the graphic designer as well. And then the manufacturing process itself takes anywhere from 10 to 14 business days. So by the time you add it all up, yes, I was just editing some manuscripts for the July-August issue, which will mail the end of June. And I've been working on those for a couple of weeks, and I'm about ready to start on the August-September issue of Retriever Journal as well. So I'm always about 2 or 3 months ahead of the magazine schedule of what it says on the cover. But when you throw in 6 issues a year, you know, it's always funny. I'm always working on the winter issues and trying to pick a cover maybe of a Labrador that's got ice on his coat, or, you know, there's blizzard or something like that, and it's August. And it's always a little jarring. But I guess up in Michigan here, we, you know, it's the weather's not, you know, too far off from that. So,
well, you've just reminded me, Jake Smith, editor of 3 magazines, why I'm glad I got out of that business a while back. I don't miss it at all. I was, in fact, when I first got into that world, one of my good friends edited a quarterly magazine. He spent more time trout fishing than editing a magazine about trout fishing, but that's just a problem for me, I think. Jake Smith, the editor of Retriever Journal and Pointing Dog Journal, among other things. I'm Scott Linden, your host here at the Upland Nation podcast. On the travel side, readers of the newsletter, I mentioned number 1 and number 2, South Dakota, Kansas. Number 3 on the list of places you want to go this fall, Jake's favorite place, North Dakota. And then number 4, Jake, I'll give you just a quick quiz here. Of all the other upland bird hunting states, what do you think number 4 on the list might be?
Oh boy.
I know it's well, like a candy store.
The easy answer would most likely say Montana. Pretty, so I think I'll stick with that.
Pretty close. In fact, I'd say statistically, I'm just a music major, I can't count this high, but yeah, they're within a point or two of each other, Montana and Iowa. So
Iowa.
Iowa's getting more and more good press. The bird numbers have been up a little bit lately, and that stuff all kind of circulates and marinates and then bubbles again to the top, and people start skimming off the good stuff. I think that's why Kansas ended up slightly higher than South Dakota this time around. But anyway, more to come on that. And if you haven't taken the poll yet, I'll remind you to get back to the newsletter you got and then take that poll. I'll update you in a couple weeks. So there are, you know better than me, there's probably three or four magazines that speak to our favorite sports, maybe five or six, depending on how you define those. And then there's a bazillion other places to get information like that. So how do you differentiate your two sporting dog magazines from all those other things out there? What is the overarching, I don't know, motive, driving force?
It would have to be the focus on the dogs. There are a lot of the other wonderful outdoor magazines include stuff about dogs. They will perhaps do a special issue about dogs. There's usually always a training column or two in there. But by and large, everything is in our magazine is about that bond that a hunter, an outdoorsman, or a family member has with their dog. It's in the photos, it's in the stock photos we choose. We don't have whereas perhaps a general interest hunting magazine may have a dog column, we're a dog magazine that does not have a dogless hunter column, for example. I don't really know any other way to put it. And so that niche that we have carved out with the focus on just the dogs, and then also zeroing that focus into having one magazine just devoted to the pointing breeds and then another devoted just to the retrievers, it allows us to really dive into more those particular qualities with the different types of breeds, the retrievers and flushers and then the pointing breeds. What I like about that is from an aesthetic standpoint, I love the photographs that I have to work with. There are, you know, ardent followers of both groups of dogs, and there are lots of people, Steve included, who have both. I've had both in the past, and I hunt with both. When I had my old setter, I had a lab at the time, and they were just a dynamite grouse and woodcock team. My dad right now has an older lab. Her days are getting close to retirement, and a couple of really good pointers, and they make just a fantastic team together. So seeing that crossover is nice. But the dogs are really what drive us, and it's and kind of a throwback more to the tradition. I've been bringing in some older stories now, some from George Bird Evans. I've gotten to know the folks at the old Hemlock Foundation, bringing back some of Dad's old stories from some of his old books, and seeing some of that content come back, I get comments from readers saying that it's nice to see those in the pages again. It's not all a go, hunt, shoot sort of mentality in our pages. It's a little bit more of just kind of slowing down and taking your time, except for when you're training a dog. Obviously you need some good solid information, but we always try to speak to that quality of, is, you know, I think it was the title of a Jane Hill book, of being there, and that aspect is kind of what drives our pursuits.
You know, I love the idea of what you're doing with both your dad's stuff and some of the even older stuff out of books. You know, more of a, pardon the, I don't mean to sound condescending or anything else, or snooty for that matter, but more literary stuff. Some of us who write for a living aspire to that stuff, and there's just not near as much of it around anymore. So we appreciate that as readers that you're bringing some of that back. But bringing it back to the 21st century, I wonder, if most people know of all of the digital stuff that you're providing us with, in addition to the ink stuck to dead trees. I mean, you're doing all sorts of other things.
We do. We're not doing as much as I would like. We've been very cautious in that regard. Going forward, a lot of that with the digital age. We have an email newsletter, social media channels, obviously, like everybody else. And we have some additional content that we post online that is not in the magazine. What Dad and I have always been conscious of is giving away too much, obviously, but also just that so much is available on digitally and on the internet all over the place. We want to develop more of that relationship, and the magazine, holding it in the hands, really sort of deepens that relationship. Some of the plans that we have going forward into the future that we've been working on for a while and taking baby steps toward is offering more content online, stuff that is in the magazine. We want to make sure that our website and our subscriber database talk to each other very well, and that for those who are non-subscribers, we might be able to introduce them to the magazine and the content and the writers and some of the photos in a little bit more of a less investment way on a website, but then also not, give away the farm so that we don't give them a reason not to subscribe and join our ranks. So some of those digital things, I've probably been a little bit more cautious than some others, but I also feel like I'm a writer myself too. So I'd like to, I'm very, protective of the creative content as well.
I get it. Yeah.
Content is king. Obviously, it doesn't matter if it's a magazine page, a web page, an email newsletter, a social media post. So having content generators is key, and treating those content generators with respect, not only of in how you do business with them, but in how you treat their work. That has always, maybe that has forced me to slow down a little bit, but I want to make sure that we do things right before we leap into it.
Love it. As a content generator, do appreciate that. Absolutely. but speaking of content and generating that, giving away the store if you told us what we can look forward to in the next issue of both of those magazines, would you?
I would not. In fact, I had that issue plan up.
Oh, great.
They said I was just working on the July-August issue of Pointing Dog Journal. And like I mentioned, there's a pretty so-so Kansas story about hunting in there coming up in our July-August issue.
He maybe works cheap, though. So
yeah, maybe to get some blood boiling. But then again, with it being a summer issue, I focus a little bit more on training. So we've got three really good training articles. One from pretty well-known writer Tom Keir about some of the science behind hydration and keeping your dogs in top performance. Another one from her name is Dr. Janelle Appel, and she is a canine, let's see if I can say this right, sports rehabilitationist, basically. She travels a lot to hunt tests and field trials and all that. She's this mobile vet clinic. And she provides a lot of fantastic information that I really hope everybody takes to heart on how to warm up and cool your dogs down appropriately from a muscle perspective. Not,
oh, nice.
Tom handles the hydration aspect in the article, but this is more exercises you can do to help prevent injury to your dog. And something as simple as just taking a fast walk before you start hunting. So many guys open up the back of the tailgate,
dog jumps down, guns close, and they go. And I don't know about you, but I need to walk around a little bit before, you know, I hit the woods. And our dogs are the same way. And then, and when you end that hunt, being able to either leash your dog, bring them into heel, and have a nice walk back to the truck, a lot of that helps the science of the muscles and the recovery so much better. So we've got some information on that. And then a fun little article about things you can do, which is kind of appropriate during all of this quarantine stuff, with cross training, different activities just to sort of kind of lighten things up and enrich your dog with different experiences. It's by a writer out your way, whom I've worked with before, John Shuey, and he calls it cross training for your dog. And he talks about whether it's teaching them how to hunt for shed antlers or some agility training, different ways and different locations to practice hunting commands and all of that. Our dogs like to be challenged. They like to be mentally challenged, not just physically challenged. And so he gives some good information about that.
And by the way, I got to tell you, thank you for bringing some of John's stuff back in. I hadn't seen his byline in forever. He wrote a great book about hunting out here, in where to go and that sort of thing. And so it was really nice to see his byline in. I think it was in your last edition as well. You had a piece by him. But
yeah, he wrote our Western Wings column.
There you go.
It's a rotating type of column. You wrote one for us in the past too, after Ben Williams retired.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very fun getting to know him. Got a great story from Tom Davis. Tom always provides a wonderful story. He's got such a unique way of telling stories that Dad always said this, and I really believe it. There are a few writers that when they come in, we kind of put the red pen down and we just kind of pour a cup of coffee and just read, just because we're fans ourselves. And he is definitely one of them. One other article that we have coming out in July, August issue, and it just arrived a couple of days ago. It's from Dave Smith, who for the last several years has written our game bird forecast articles every fall.
Mm-hmm.
And he tackled a topic on hunter participation for upland game bird hunting, and sort of the relationship that used to always happen where hunter participation followed the bird populations. And when they were up, a lot of hunters. When they were down, not so many. And what he's finding now, he talked with several different wildlife biologists and upland game specialists in the major states, that relationship is sort of decoupling now. And obviously it's something that everyone in the industry always talks about, the decrease in just hunters. So he analyzes that and looks at that from several different angles. Always says, it also says that, this is a great time to get out, because there's some good populations out there, but there's less competition. But then also provide some ideas on how we can help recruit some more hunters. So that's, I feel, is going to be an important article, and it will be interesting to see how that comes out.
That is a constant battle, and not just on a global scale, but this whole idea of, well, why should I want to recruit more hunters? Because then they're just going to be parking where I'm parking and hunting the birds I'm hunting. I'm interested in reading that. That'll be good read.
That is a problem. The kind of the saying goes that I would love there to be more hunters, just not where I am.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple fact is the stronger the coalition, the more clout we have, not just for, things we'd normally think of like Second Amendment rights, but also for habitat preservation rights, the more money that's generated through license sales, all of that stuff. As America becomes increasingly urban, we can't have that voice for the outdoors be dwindling at the same time. Otherwise, the states are not going to have any incentive for making sure that those sorts of traditions, that the land and all of that stuff is taken care of.
So yeah, it's going to be an interesting, it's been an interesting, you know, last dozen years or so as we've seen that participation number decline. So we wanted to bring a little light to that, and Dave had some excellent contacts, in that world. For Retriever Journal, the next issue I'm working on is our August-September issue, and again, there's still a little bit of training going on, but we've got some neat hunting articles. Charlie Journey is a great retriever trainer, and he's sort of taking us through his entire playbook over a long series of articles, which is nice. We have some nutrition information. I've got an article myself. It was something that came out of a conference I went to several years ago that was sponsored by Purina, and it's about identifying lameness in our dogs by their gait and what we can look for, sort of the little hitches in their giddy ups that might tell us if our dog is dealing with a nagging injury. So our general, you know, columns kind of address the same sorts of things as they do with our health and our wing shooting and things like that. So, yeah, I think there's some good stuff to look forward to.
Excellent. And thanks for that rundown. I'm looking forward to it. Of course, I go right to my own page every time I get your book, but that's just my problem. You know, we're getting towards the end of the hour here, and we could go on and on and on. We'll do this again if you sit back after a couple of days, sure, and think I did okay with you. But, you know, before we go, based on all these things, from reading great literature to all that advice and all those insights on everything from nutrition to exercise, if you were going to leave us, Jake Smith, the editor of the Pointing Dog Journal and the Retriever Journal, if you were going to leave us here at the Upland Nation podcast with any advice as dog owners and trainers and bird hunters, what would you boil it down to?
Relax. I would say when you get out there, it is not a competition, no matter what social media tries to tell you. No matter what you're seeing about other people getting birds, what other people's dogs are doing, when you are out there, it is you and your dog and the environment. And that's what you're, I don't even want to say that's what you're up against. That's what you're out there to enjoy. Part of being able to relax is making sure that your dog is enjoying himself or herself as well, and obviously they do that when they're healthier. They will stick with you more when they're trained, and you don't have to fret that they're going to run off. And so having those things, knowing your dog is healthy, knowing your dog is trained, it's going to allow you to relax. Just leave the competition to the athletic fields. It's just, we shouldn't have it in our covers.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. And this is from somebody who's seen it all, been there and done that, Jake Smith. It's a pleasure to talk to you at length. Gosh, I haven't seen you since Las Vegas and the SHOT Show. So appreciate all you do for all of us on the Retriever and the Pointer side. Jake Smith, the editor of both the Retriever Journal and the Pointing Dog Journal, thank you for being a part of the Upland Nation. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Scott. You too.
And the rest of you, don't go away, because we have got a lot more coming up right after a couple brief mentions as I pay the bills. And the first one is a thank you, big shout out to Gunner Kennels. Learn more about them at gunner.com. That's what Flick rides in when he's not riding shotgun. I know, don't send me an email. It could be worse. The safest dog crate on the market, the only 5-star safety related, you know, all of that stuff. Learn all about it at gunner.com. But Boy, I was struck when mine first arrived at how heavy that package was. And yeah, 5-10 pounds more than all those single-walled crates out there that claim to be so safe. It's worth it. The extra weight, you're not going to worry about that too much, and especially not when it comes to getting your new gunner crate to you. Because, and Flick is nodding in agreement, that's his feelings on the subject as well. He says the best news is, besides being comfortable in the right shape and the right size and the fact that he is safe inside his gunner kennel, is that my friends Addison and Macy and everybody else at Gunner Kennels will send it to you free. That's right, free shipping on every gunner kennel purchase. Learn more about how that all works and then put your virtual dog in a virtual gunner kennel at gunner.com. And speaking of Tom Davis, dogtra.com is where you'll find some videos by trainer Tom Davis, trainer Corey Hart, and a whole bunch of instructional videos on how to use the Pathfinder. That's the GPS and training collar that works through your cell phone. You don't need cell phone coverage. You just need a cell phone, and it becomes your training collar and GPS collar handheld. Learn more about all of that at dogtra.com, and remember that anytime you buy anything over $200, shipping is free, and you'll get another 10% off if you use the code SLUN10. It's all at dogtra.com. And that is my cue to talk to you about public access, do-it-yourself hunting, you know, the whole idea of walk-in ground and taking advantage of it. I call it This Land Is Your Land, and it is brought to you by FindBirdHuntingSpots.com. Sure appreciate your visiting and maybe learning a little bit here and there, offering up a suggestion at FindBirdHuntingSpots.com. You know, I've been doing a lot of scouting for fishing, I guess, is the best way to look at it. The weather hasn't been good. Some of the streams are closed, but I'm still getting out and taking a look at them. And I was reminded of something that maybe you ought to take another look at as well. And that is, look at the places you fish as places you might hunt in the fall. Now, it's not going to work all the time, but let me give you a few examples of what I've experienced in the last few weeks. One of my favorite desert trout streams. Last year when I was fishing it one evening, I looked to my left and there were a pair of chuckers coming down to the water. Never thought about that place before as a place to chase those birds, but I will be back this year. The stream that started it all for me here in Central Oregon has some tributaries that are closed to fishing, but are wide open to rough grouse hunting. Maybe yours too. And then that storied stream that everybody tries to fish for summer steelhead has turned out to be one of my favorite chucker and valley quail hunting spots. Actually shot a mountain quail or two on one of the tributaries of that famous river. So even if you're simply crossing a piece of water you know well to find uncrowded hunting, you might want to take a look at some of those fishing spots that could be hunting spots as well. I'll never forget the last one, I promise. I was standing there drinking coffee on the porch of a lodge in South Dakota, looking down at a giant reservoir. And if you know South Dakota, you know what giant reservoir I'm talking about. Watching some walleye fishermen down there casting toward the banks, towards this general direction, so I could watch the whole thing play out. One guy yelled a little bit when he made a bad cast. And what did that yell do? Spooked two ringnecks out of the grass along the banks of that big reservoir. So fishing, hunting, not only do they go hand in hand, they might go hand in hand in the same location. That land is your land in large part. So take a look at some of those spots and kill two birds with one cast, so to speak. All right, just about ready to close it up around here after a couple brief messages. The first one brought to you by HuntHuronSD.com. Huron, South Dakota is an area where the pheasants outnumber the people. They have 124,000 acres of public access of one sort or another within 60 miles of Huron, South Dakota. And then if you can hear me now, you're lucky enough not to need ESP yet, electronic shooter's protection. But if you want to make sure that you never, ever have a hearing problem, visit ESPAmerica.com and browse all the choices for electronic hearing protection in the field and on the range. Fascinating discussion with Jake Smith at Retriever Journal and the Pointing Dog Journal. Thank you all for listening. Hope you learned as much as I did. Kind of fun to talk publishing again. Not enough to get back into it, though. Appreciate your listening. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe, rate, or review the Upland Nation podcast wherever you get your version of it. If you'd like to talk more, you got some ideas, then check out the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page, the Upland Nation Facebook page, and then everything happening at uplandnation.com. The leash is getting longer by the week. Maybe in your state, your governor is a little bit smarter than some of the others and has let you decide for yourself what you want to do. However it is, it's always a good time to reacquaint yourself with family and friends and to do more work with your dog. I'm Scott Linden. Sure appreciate you listening to the Upland Nation podcast. Until next time, I'll see you on the internet.